Okay, everyone, so welcome to the meditation class. And as usual, I'm going to start off by just saying a few things, and then we're going to go on to do some meditation afterwards. One of the things that I like to do in meditation is always at the end to review what has happened, to have some idea of, getting some clarity about how your meditation practice is progressing. And the things that you look out for when you review your meditation are very simple things, nothing kind of advanced, nothing about really, getting insight or anything like that. But very simple things about why is it that you become peaceful in one meditation and not another one? Why is it that you have more clarity? Why is it that you develop a more positive mental state with more kindness and care and these kind of things? And that's really what you need to look out for. And once you understand how these things come about and you see how they affect your meditation, you start to be able to kind of guide yourself, in the beginning. This is my mental state, this is where I need to be, and you guide yourself accordingly. And one of the kind of very important things in meditation practice is to have a kind of gentle, kind attitude towards yourself and towards the whole world. And if you have a hardness of the mind, it's not really going to be very conducive. It has to be a kind of softness to the heart, and then meditation kind of tends to function much better, because that's the attitude that the mind likes, and the mind kind of goes towards the object when you have that gentleness inside. So these are the things to look out for. Another thing that you should look out for in your meditation is, what does it mean to let go in your meditation? How do you actually, in other words, just relax and just be? How do you do that? What does it mean? And very often we try to let go, we try not to push ourselves or force the mind in any direction. And still, even though we try, the very trying is often part of the problem, it makes it worse. So you learn how to kind of just allow things to be completely. Put yourself in the right state at the beginning, nudging the mind in the right direction, and then just allowing things to be, like you're just resting, you're sitting back and allowing the world to unfold. So this is what I mean by reviewing the meditation at the end, understanding how you let go, what kind of perceptions you give rise to at the beginning, so that the process can unfold properly. And one of the great kind of perceptions that is very useful to use at the beginning, but only use it if you're comfortable with it, is the idea of dying, or the idea of death. The idea that you never know when you're going to die. And you could die very quickly. You have no idea. What if you're going to die the next moment? What then? What does that feel like? Are you able to kind of get the feeling for that, what that means? That you can die in one moment? If you're able to give rise to that sort of feeling, if it feels scary or it feels kind of off-putting or you can't do it, then please don't do it. But if you're able to give rise to this feeling without fear and just to see what happens, you will notice that when that happens, the moment you are really almost like ready to die in the next moment, at that moment your mind becomes very conducive to meditation practice. Because the idea of dying is so closely related to meditation itself. And I think this is one of the reasons, one of many reasons, why the Buddha emphasized the idea of Maranasati or Maranasanya so much in the Sutta. Maranasati, mindfulness of death, Maranasanya, perception of death, because it has this very powerful effect. It has very powerful effects in our general practice, how we live generally, but also just in our meditation practice. Because the moment you know, the moment you are ready to die in the next moment, there's nothing of interest in this world anymore. And because there's nothing of interest in this world, there's nothing to think about. There's nothing to be worried about. There's no problems. Everything just drops from the mind. And you become peaceful if you do it right, just like that. So this is one of those ways of, using your perception and just using this idea. And it's true to some extent, because one day it's going to be the last moment and it can be happen at any time. So it's not actually wrong. And now is the only time to get ready. So it's actually correct in many ways. And then suddenly you become incredibly peaceful because there's nothing in this world that is of interest to you anymore. It's just an idea, just the one way of doing things. Do it only if you feel comfortable. If you feel this too challenging, or it kind of scares you, or it makes you anxious or whatever, then please don't do it, because then it becomes counterproductive. But it's a very useful perception overall. Okay, let's try to do some meditation together. Okay, so as always, just start off by allowing things to settle down, making sure you are comfortable and at ease, but also that your mind is in the right spot. Your mind has the right qualities that make this meditation possible. Make sure you have a sense of compassion and kindness and care for yourself, and understanding that everyone in this world, yourself included, experiencing far more problems and difficulties than we really would like. And it's hard to deal with sometimes. So have a sense of compassion for yourself, understanding that things are really out of control. It's not your fault. And then with that gentle, caring mind, you're making the path of meditation come alive. And if you do find it hard to settle down and find that peace within her, you can try to use this idea of what does it feel like if I were to die in the very near future, so near that there's almost no time in between. If you can get that idea into your mind, but you have to do it very gently, with a sense of care, so that actually it becomes a positive experience. And then feel what happens to the mind as a consequence. Otherwise, just carry on as usual. Okay, so coming to the end of the meditation, not quite yet. Just take those few moments at the very end just to review what has happened. And if you do feel a bit more at ease and relaxed or whatever, ask yourself why that is the case. Okay, everyone, so are there any questions or comments today? All quiet. Yeah. Okay. Anything from outside? Or yeah, okay, let's take those. Okay, so here we have a few questions from outside. So let's see. From Eddie, dear Ajahn, what do we actually do in meditation? Once I heard about scanning the body, watching thoughts, feelings, then watching the breath, and also letting things be. It seems kind of many. Please advise. Okay, well, remember that the idea of meditation practice is there's two things that we are moving towards, two qualities of mind that we are trying to improve upon, not trying, allowing to improve by getting out of the way. And one of those qualities is peace. You're trying to become more peaceful, or you're trying to allow the mind to become more peaceful, to be more precise. And the other one is a sense of well-being, we can call that joy, you can call that just feeling less suffering, whatever, but a sense of well-being as well. And of course, peace and well-being are very closely related to each other. So you should do anything that gives rise to more peace. Yeah, that's what you should be doing in your meditation practice. And in the beginning, very often what that means is just sitting back and allowing things to be, not doing anything, not scanning the body, not watching the breath, not doing anything, but just allowing things to be so that the mind kind of gradually calms down. Yeah, because very often you come into meditation, mind is very active, very restless, and you have to allow it to kind of settle a bit. Then as the mind settles, the mindfulness comes up, that is when you start to maybe scan the body a little bit, just to allow the body to relax. This is the idea, again, about having the right attitude in your meditation so that the body can actually relax properly, sense of, compassion, kindness, and this kind of thing, just all those good qualities within her. Yeah, so that is kind of the idea here. So you have to do stage by stage. And then you have to look for that peace and look for that sense of well-being. And if you're not experiencing any well-being or peace in meditation, then there isn't much point really. This is what it's all for. And if some people find meditation very hard. For some people it is an unpleasant experience. And maybe that's the case for you. And for those people, I would not recommend meditation. For those people, focus on the other factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. Be kind, be generous, read the suttas, get some right view, these kind of things. This is from Ram. How to understand the nature of thoughts? Should I keep questioning the origin of thoughts? Or what is the way to fully understand the defilement that exists in the mind through meditation? So depends on what kind of thoughts it is, and thoughts come in many varieties, but there's two kind of main categories. which correspond to the two main hindrances in meditation. And one is thoughts that are irritated, or, you know, you is kind of has some degree of ill will involved in them. This is one kind of thought. And the way to overcome those thoughts is through compassion and understanding and just letting it be. Okay, people don't know what they're doing. Yeah, okay, let it be. It doesn't matter. They're suffering as well, just like me. And just don't, you know, overcome those thoughts through some kind of skillful means to do with compassion or metta or something like that. But then there are all the thoughts that have to do with the world, yeah, where you're thinking about the world, you're thinking about what you're going to do, how you're going to solve your problems, what the work you have, or family matters, or whatever. And all of that is included in sensual thought or sensory thoughts. These are thoughts about the world. And the reason why you have those thoughts is because you think the world is interesting. You think there are things to be done in the world. You think that when you solve things, things will get better. Yeah, this is the problem with those worldly thoughts. And as long as you have those, as long as you think the world has a solution to it, that you will get somewhere, that there is a goal or a purpose to all of this, you will carry on thinking about that world. So the idea here is to understand the downside of the world. The more you understand the downside of the world, the less interest you have in that world. The more you understand it's, you know, sometimes good, sometimes bad. We know it's going to end in death. It's, you know, it's just isn't all that interesting, basically. Yeah. And this taking away the interest from the world is what allows you to overcome those kind of thoughts. Those are the two main categories of thought. It can be very hard to overcome unless you find some degree of pleasure in your meditation. That's why you look for the peace, look for the enjoyment, and as you, you know, the mind moves towards the enjoyment, you're going to be able to let go of the other stuff. We have a question from Germany. I read that the Buddha spent many lives with his wife, the later queen. She supported him for many lives. What to do to meet our loved ones again and live together like the Buddha did? Okay, well, I'm not sure if that is it. That's not kind of the core of Buddhism, you know. But anyway, is but the you can say that the many of the stories that we know from the Buddha and his previous lives and his queens, they are just stories, and I wouldn't take too much. They're not all that important. We don't really know if they are true or not, or, you know, it's all very uncertain. So forget about those stories. What we do know about the Buddha was that, yes, he lived in a good family and they were well off. His wife wasn't the queen and he wasn't the king, but, you know, they were well off. And despite life being well off, despite having a nice wife, a good family, being wealthy, being well educated, having everything that anyone could really want in this world, despite all of that, he left the household life to become a monk. That is the interesting part about this Dhamma, right? This is what is really fascinating. So instead of thinking about how can we live together with your queen, whoever, you know, your favorite wife or whatever, instead of thinking about how you can continue that, ask yourself the downside. That's what the Buddha said, looked for, the downside. He saw the danger in that, and then he decided it wasn't really worthwhile. That, to me, is what is interesting about the Buddha's life. But, okay, having said that, there is also a sutta that talks about how to be, you know, if you get really well, if you have a really good relationship with your wife or husband and you want to be reborn together again, there is actually a sutta about that. And the Buddha says that if you have the same spiritual qualities, you will get reborn again together. Same spiritual qualities basically means the same kind of faith, same kind of learning. Learning here means understanding of the Dhamma, really. Same kind of sila, same kind of wisdom, and same kind of generosity. Something like that. I can't remember exactly the five, but that's pretty close. Probably 4 out of 5, maybe 5 out of 5. So that sutta, by the way, is found in the Kanda Sanyutta, the Connected Discourses, 22nd chapter, sutta number 102, something like that. Anyway, that's with the Nakula Pita, Nakula Mata. Last question for today. For those traditional families, can we talk about, is having children before marriage okay? Or should all traditions still exist in a changing world? Isn't happiness and contentment more important? Is having children before marriage okay? From the Buddhist point of view, there's no problem. Yeah, Buddhism doesn't say you cannot have children before marriage. But there are other values in our society that we have to deal with. Yeah, I mean, if you live in a very traditional conservative society and you are going to be given a very hard time if you have children before marriage, then you probably should be careful because it's going to lead to suffering for you. Huh? So you have to take that into account. You have to ask yourself what is going to work in your circumstances. But there's nothing immoral in it from a Buddhist point of view. That is not what Buddhist morality is about. Buddhist morality is about kindness. It is not about certain things being wrong and right just because they are wrong and right. So if you happen to have children before marriage by accident, then I can assure you, you have made no mistake from a Buddhist point of view. It is not immoral in its own right. But if you are contemplating it for the future, then of course you have to take into account what society around you thinks. Otherwise, you're going to ask for a lot of trouble. Should old traditions exist in a changing world? If old traditions are good, they should persist. If they're not good, it's best to discard them. Traditions can be good and bad. They're not kind of one or the other. Isn't happiness and contentment more important? Absolutely. That one we can agree on. So, okay. Everyone, so let's just pay respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha.